From claims of healings and visions to the world's most inexplicable events, whether you're a believer or a skeptic, the truth is always worth the hunt.
EWTN Radio presents The Miracle Hunter with Michael O'Neill.
Welcome to the Miracle Hunter radio show on EWTN Radio. This is Michael O'Neill. I'm the Miracle Hunter. Hey, people who tune into the show know I love talking about Mary and her apparitions all around the world and the various ways she's honored with icons and devotions. And one of my all-time favorite devotions, of course, I'm a Polish guy with an Irish name, but Our Lady of Częstochowa is coming up on August 26th. And I was just there in Poland and Lithuania leading a pilgrimage group this past April. And we filmed there at Our Lady of Częstochowa, the beautiful shrine of Jasna Góra there. And that will be turned into an Explore with the Miracle Hunter episode coming out next year. So very excited for that. And another Marian devotion that not every American knows, but some in Southern California certainly do, Our Lady of Lavang, that is the Vietnamese devotion related to those Marian apparitions happening in the year 1798, recognized by Pope John Paul II as an authentic vision of Mary. We'll be talking about, we're with Elizabeth Nguyen, about the National Shrine of Our Lady of Lavang that is springing up there in Southern California in the Diocese of Orange. So we'll be excited to talk to Elizabeth on the progress of that new shrine. And check out my EWTN television series, Explore with the Miracle Hunter, every Saturday at 6 p.m. Tonight, we travel to Rome to look at two Marian apparitions, looking at the miracle that led to the building of St. Mary Major, and the other, a dramatic conversion when an anti-Catholic Jew wears a miraculous medal. Check that one out tonight and every Saturday at 6 p.m. Eastern Time. And next week, they might be saints, Bishop Alphonse Gallegos. He strolled the streets of Sacramento, saving souls by visiting families and mixing with lowriders in the Latino community. I'll be profiling the Bishop of the Barrios, Alphonse Gallegos. Check that one out on next Thursday. And look for my latest book, Science and the Miraculous, How the Catholic Church Investigates the Supernatural. It's out from 10 Books and available at EWTNRC.com. And for today's date, we look at the 365 Days with Mary project. Every week we do this, where we look at the Marian devotion that lines up exactly to the day's date, August 19th. Today is Our Lady of Victory in San Marco La Catola in Italy in the 13th century. And the might-be saint of the day is Blessed Jordan of Pisa. And question of the week is the Virgin of Revelation from Tre Fontana in Italy, an approved Marian apparition. Stay with us for that answer. Let's take a look at the miracle news. We do this every week where we talk about the miracles happening all around the world and those things that relate to miracles. And perhaps this isn't a real miracle when we talk about Marian apparitions and Eucharistic miracles and weeping statues and healing miracles, things like this. But it certainly is a miracle of architecture, you might say. Brazil is to have the largest religious statue in the world, says the headline. And so there's a new statue of St. Michael the Archangel that will break the record previously claimed by a Brazilian statue of St. Rita of Cascia. And you might be saying, doesn't Brazil also have the Cristo Redentor statue? Yes, they have tons of giant statues, apparently. The construction of the sculpture of St. Michael the Archangel has already begun in the city of São Miguel Arcanjo in the northern rural region of the state of São Paulo in southern Brazil. At 187 feet high, including the pedestal, it will be the largest Christian statue in the world, according to its creators. And currently, the image of Santa Rita of Cascia, St. Rita of Cascia, located in Santa Cruz, Rio Grande do Norte, is said to hold this position. And this Catholic monument is 138 feet high, plus 48 feet of its pedestal or base, totaling 184 feet. And so that's set to currently hold the record. And the project is budgeted at more than $5.2 million and will be funded by donations from the faithful, the community, and the private sector. And the statue is being made by sculptor Marcus Maura, the same who worked on the Christ the Protector of Encantado in Rio Grande do Sul. So another giant statue being built in Brazil. So check out the link on the Miracle Hunter Facebook page to see more about this incredible new giant statue being built in Brazil. Let's take a look at Catholic Pub Trivia. We do this every week. We ask a trivia question and give out a prize to an emailer that gets the right answer. And last week, we talked about the Shroud of Turin. And you can check out that fascinating interview last week about the Shroud of Turin and some of the new research that's being done on it. You can go to EWTN.com/radio, look for the Miracle Hunter, and click on the archives and listen to last week's incredible interview. So for this week, the question is, other than the Shroud of Turin or the Guadalupe image on the Tilma, can you name any other achiropoita or not made from human hand images with some form of church recognition? And there may be many, or maybe a few, I should say, around the world of different smaller statues. I think Our Lady of Torcaroma in Colombia is one of them, where, according to some tradition, that this statue was said to have divine origin. And then there are others, like Our Lady of Las Lajas in Potosí in Colombia, Our Lady of the Flagstones, where it was said that a young girl was healed of deafness, and she encountered a vision of the Virgin Mary, and what was left behind was an image emblazoned on the wall of a cave there in Colombia. A beautiful sanctuary is built there, and this is, through tradition, been recognized by the Catholic Church as authentic. And then there's Our Lady of Absam, who an incredible image of Mary that was emblazoned on a glass plane, a pane of glass, and the local bishop came and investigated, and he tried to remove it with acid, and the image kept coming back, and that's Our Lady of Absam. That was recognized by the local bishop. So really an amazing thing to have a couple, at least, of these images that they can't explain, and they say it was not made from human hands. And of course, the most famous of these are the Tilma and the Shroud of Turin. For this week's question we have, we're talking with Father Timothy Tarnacki about Our Lady of Częstochowa, whose feast day is on August 26th. And, of course, we'll talk to him about the recognition of the Church in many ways of this miraculous icon and its celebration as the Queen of Poland. Pope John Paul II, being Polish himself, visited the Jasna Góra Shrine several times. And the question for today is, who is the only other pope to have visited Our Lady of Częstochowa? If you think you know that answer and want to win the prize, the image of the faces of Mary, send me an email to miraclehunter@ewtn.com, or just go to my website, miraclehunter.com, and you can contact me that way. And answers and winners will be posted on the show page of miraclehunter.com. We need to take a short break, but when we come back, we'll be talking with Father Timothy Tarnacki about the feast day of Our Lady of Częstochowa. Stay with us for that.
Now, back to the Miracle Hunter on EWTN. Here's Michael O'Neill.
Welcome back. You're listening to the Miracle Hunter radio show on EWTN Radio. This is Michael O'Neill. I'm the Miracle Hunter. People who tune into this show know I make this comment often, but you see the O apostrophe in my last name, you think I'm an Irish guy. But actually, I'm more Polish than anything. And I had the great honor and privilege of going to this land of my birth, or my homeland anyway, you might say, and that is Poland. And I went there and Lithuania, leading a pilgrimage this past year in April. And it was an amazing thing to get to see all the sights of Poland that I'd always read about, but that I'd never seen in person. So what a great honor and privilege to get to do that. And of course, the highlight of the trip, perhaps the gem of Poland, as we might say, especially when we talk about Mary, is Our Lady of Częstochowa, that incredible shrine of Jasna Góra, that Black Madonna that has been so honored by popes and other people around the world who celebrate her as the Queen of Poland. And it was an amazing thing to see the ceremony that surrounds putting her to sleep at night and the waking her up in the morning with song. It was a beautiful thing to see and be a part of. It was fun to embrace my Polish heritage in a big way that week. And we're so excited because the feast day of Our Lady of Częstochowa is coming right up. We have August 26th, the celebration of that. And who better to talk to us than Father Timothy Tarnacki? He's our expert on Our Lady of Częstochowa, and he's at the Doylestown, Pennsylvania National Shrine of Our Lady of Częstochowa. Welcome back to the program today, Father Timothy.
Hello. Thank you, Michael, for having me. I think it has become a little tradition now that I'm on the show and to talk about Our Lady of Częstochowa, and I'm really glad that you have been to Częstochowa recently, and so you have a completely different image and a new insight about the miraculous icon of Our Lady. So it's great to be here with you.
Yeah, absolutely. I think I've always relied on you for your insights and your experience having been there, and I've always imagined, based on your descriptions, what it would be like, and looking it up on the internet isn't quite the same, is it? It's going there in person. So it's really a remarkable thing. And as I mentioned, the whole ceremony and the process going to see that icon where you can actually approach it on your knees, going around this giant room where the chapel as it is, and go around on your knees as you venerate that image. It's quite an experience, especially for someone with a Polish heritage like myself. So for people who don't know, and especially if they see the name Częstochowa, that name is, for English speakers, it's somewhat of a difficult name to pronounce even. So I think that many Americans still don't really know who Our Lady of Częstochowa is. So let's talk about it. Where does this devotion trace back to?
Yeah, so it's interesting that you mentioned the name, because there are a couple different names for Our Lady of Częstochowa. The most popular one, and I think all over the world, that's the name Our Lady of Częstochowa, but that's connected with the city. Because basically the town of Częstochowa, or a village of Częstochowa, has practically grown with the shrine, because once the image got there in 14th century, basically this Częstochowa was just a little village, and over time it grew with the shrine and with the icon of Our Lady. But some other names that are connected with the icon is, of course, the nickname, the Black Madonna, but also the name Our Lady of Jasna Góra, which is the name of the shrine where Mary is in Częstochowa. So Jasna Góra means the bright hill, the bright mountain, and that's the name of the shrine. So many times Our Lady of Częstochowa is referred to as Our Lady of Jasna Góra, or Our Lady of the Bright Hill, or in Latin, Clara Montana, so the Bright Hill. But the beginnings of the icon, of course, are a little bit mysterious. There is a legend that attributes the beginning of this icon with St. Luke, the evangelist. And there is a strong tradition that St. Luke is the author of a few Marian icons, that he was a painter. And so this is how we connect with Our Lady of Częstochowa and St. Luke, that apparently, according to the ancient legend, St. Luke is the author of the icon. And then the legend tells us that the icon was in Jerusalem, and then for some time it was lost, until in the 4th century it was found by St. Helen, the mother of Constantine, and that's when the icon got into Constantinople. After that, we know that the icon went east, so present-day Ukraine and the kingdom of Ruthenia, and then in Belts, in the castle there, and that's where the Prince of Poland, Ladislaus, he found the image of Our Lady of Częstochowa there, and he brought it with himself to Poland, to his kingdom, and so that is present-day Częstochowa. And from 1382, that's when the shrine in Poland with the miraculous icon of Our Lady started in Poland.
Absolutely. We're talking today with Father Timothy Tarnacki about Our Lady of Częstochowa, Jasna Góra, as she's known in Poland and around the world. This is a big-time Marian icon and devotion here in Chicago, where I'm from, where perhaps we have more people of Polish origin than anywhere in the entire world, including Warsaw, if you just count the numbers. It's pretty amazing. So pretty much every Catholic church you go to in Chicago has some icon of Our Lady of Częstochowa. And when people look at the icon, it's somewhat of a unique icon, we might say. Mary is a dark virgin, or a black Madonna, as we might say. She has a scar on her cheek, and her expression is very somber. Perhaps she's symbolic of the strength and suffering of the Polish people. Talk a little bit about the look of the icon, Father Timothy, and what the meaning is for the Polish people.
Yeah, this is actually something that I prefer talking about rather than the history, because as I mentioned to you, there are many legends, and there's more things that we don't know about the history of the icon than we know. But I think the theology of the icon and the meaning and symbology is so much more uplifting for us. Because when we look at the icon of Our Lady of Częstochowa, of course, she's called the Black Madonna, and we can see that her face is dark. We don't know the exact origins why her face is so dark and why the image is so dark. There are many theories about it, and it could be that it faded over time. But Mary, This is a Greek style of icon called Podogetria, which means the one who shows the way. And we can see that Mary, with her right hand, she's pointing to Jesus. And that's a true Marian devotion that always points to Jesus. Even the gospel story that is associated with the icon and that has been chosen for the solemnity of Our Lady, it's the wedding at Cana, where when Mary says, "Do whatever my son tells you." And so she brings the first miracle to happen in Cana through her intercession. And so this is what the message that the icon is giving us. Mary is pointing to Jesus always, but especially she's pointing to Jesus in the moments of suffering, when we don't know what to do, when we are struggling, when the Polish people have been struggling throughout centuries with different wars and persecutions. Mary was always pointing to her son. And we can see this suffering aspect especially through various wounds and scars. We can see, of course, the two visible scars on Mary's cheek, but there are many more wounds and scars throughout the image. And so these scars, they have emerged in 1430 when the Hussites, they were kind of the Czech forerunners of the Protestant Reformation, when they tried to steal the image of Our Lady, to rob the image of all the votive offerings, the precious offerings that the people would give to the shrine and to Mary in Thanksgiving. And so when their plan failed, and miraculously, when they put the image on a cart, the horses did not want to move any farther, so that prevented their escape. They slashed Mary's cheeks with their swords, and they damaged the image. And so this is how this. But then, miraculously, the scars would stay on the image. No one was able to repair them. Even the king intervened, the king of Poland, in reparation of the image, but the best specialist could not repair those scars. And so this became a sign that Mary is the sorrowful mother, that Mary is somehow close to all of us and to the Polish people in time of suffering. But she's really close to everyone who seeks her intercession, especially in the moments of suffering.
Absolutely. And there are some stories, perhaps they're legends, perhaps they're not. But I know in Poland, when I went there, people talked about the Battle of Warsaw, or the miracle on the Vistula, perhaps Our Lady of Częstochowa appeared in the sky and was witnessed by soldiers. I don't know if you know that story at all, Father, but talk about the impact that Our Lady of Częstochowa has had, both literally and perhaps figuratively throughout Polish history regarding war.
This is so amazing. There are so many stories how Mary's intervention is connected with the history of the whole nation, and maybe even of the whole continent. So you mentioned the 1920 Battle of Warsaw, when communists took over Russia, and so that's the beginning of the Soviet Union. And so the goal of the communists invade the whole, and so they started with Poland. Poland just regained independence just 2 years earlier. And then on August 15th, which is the solemnity of the Assumption of the Blessed Virgin Mary, they reached Warsaw. And so there was a huge battle where the Soviets outnumbered Poland. But somehow the whole nation fled to Częstochowa. The soldiers went into the battlefield around Warsaw, but the people came to Częstochowa. There was such a great devotion, prayer, to save the country and communism. And so it was very unlikely that the Polish army would win this battle. And the testimonies and stories of how Our Lady has interceded in this situation. So that's one story that's very powerful. But one of the first stories that is associated with military victory with Our Lady of Częstochowa is the Swedish deluge, which was the war with Sweden in the 17th century, and the whole country was basically looted by the Swedes. And this was also a religious war because of the Protestant Reformation. And so the Swedish army finally got to Częstochowa, and the shrine of Jasna Góra is a little fortress. So there are walls, there are just a handful of soldiers defending the shrine. And somehow this huge Swedish army was not able to conquer the shrine, was not able to breach the fortress. And the cannons, they were not able to penetrate the fortress in some miraculous way. And there were visions of Mary appearing. And so from that moment, Poland was able to turn the tide and win the war with Sweden. And after that event, Mary was officially declared the Queen of Poland. And one more story, which is also very relevant, the Battle of Vienna, which was a very famous battle against the Muslim invasion of Europe. The King of Poland, before he went into the battle, he stopped in Częstochowa to pray for Mary's protection. And then he fought on behalf of the whole European contingent being asked by the Pope to defend Christianity. And then after he won the battle against the Ottoman Empire, he came back to Częstochowa and he brought a lot of the war spoils as a thanksgiving to Mary. And we still have them at the shrine in Częstochowa.
Absolutely. I did see that there. And what a great retelling of three incredible instances. And there are many throughout Polish history in war and otherwise where we see the intervention, the intercession of Our Lady of Częstochowa, the Queen of Poland. Well, we're so grateful to you, Father Timothy Tarnacki from the National Shrine of Our Lady of Częstochowa in Doylestown, Pennsylvania, for joining us today as we wrap up the program today. Please tell us what events are going on at your shrine leading up to the feast day this year.
Yes, so basically, Our Lady of Częstochowa, she is venerated all over the world. As you have mentioned, in many places in the United States, in Chicago, there are images of Our Lady in different cathedrals and basilicas all over the world in the United States. And so our community of Pauline Fathers and Brothers, we have the mission of spreading this devotion. And so we run Marian shrines dedicated to Our Lady of Częstochowa all over the world, in Australia, in South Africa, in different parts of Europe. But also here in the United States, we have the National Shrine of Our Lady of Częstochowa in Doylestown in Pennsylvania. And so this is always a very special feast day for us, the patronal feast day of our shrine. And so we have a novena leading up to this solemnity. That's how we prepare for this celebration. And then on the 26th of August, that's the actual feast day of Our Lady. But the main celebrations at our shrine will take place on August 27th. That's a Sunday, and we have a special guest, the Archbishop of Miami, the Archbishop Thomas Wensky. He's going to be the presider of the main mass and then of the devotion. So the main mass is at 12:30 p.m. in Polish, and then all of the other masses at our shrine will also be during all of the other masses will also be celebrating the solemnity. So whichever mass anyone wants to come and pray at, that's how we'll be also celebrating Our Lady of Częstochowa feast day. And then we have a special devotion at 3:30 p.m. to Our Lady and a Eucharistic procession. And this celebration is also connected with the Eucharistic revival, because on this feast day of Our Lady, we want to basically reflect what the icon is saying, and that Mary is pointing to Jesus. And at our shrine on that day, the Archbishop Wensky will consecrate the new tabernacle in our church, which will be moved from the side altar to the center of the sanctuary, so to the center of the church, showing that Jesus is in the center of our lives, and Mary keeps pointing to Jesus. So that's kind of the schedule for our celebrations in Doylestown, Pennsylvania.
Wonderful. It's quite a celebration, a celebration to honor the Queen of Poland, Our Lady of Częstochowa, there at the National Shrine of Our Lady of Częstochowa in Doylestown, Pennsylvania. We're so grateful to you, Father Timothy Tarnacki, for joining us on today's program.
Thank you so much. God bless.
God bless. That was Father Timothy Tarnacki talking to us about Our Lady of Częstochowa, which can be, the celebrations can be found coming up for August 26th and then 27th there at the National Shrine of Our Lady of Częstochowa. We need to take a short break, but when we come back, we're going to be looking at the question of the week. Stay with us for that.
Now, back to the Miracle Hunter on EWTN. Here's Michael O'Neill.
Welcome back. You're listening to the Miracle Hunter radio show on EWTN Radio. This is Michael O'Neill. I'm the Miracle Hunter. Hey, I love getting your questions. People write in from around the world with questions about miracles happening in today's world and those that have happened centuries ago. And people write in with interesting questions. I like to see what people are thinking about. And when I give talks around the country, I give a presentation for about 45 minutes, and then the last 15 minutes or maybe longer, depending on the questions, I try to answer questions from the audience. And people write into the Miracle Hunter account to find out about answers about miracles. So this week, the question is the Virgin of Revelation from Tre Fontana in Italy, an approved apparition. It's a great question written in by Mike, and he's referring to those apparitions that started in 1947 that were experienced by Bruno Carnacchiola, an anti-Catholic Adventist, actually, who had a great animus against the Catholic Church, and he saw a vision of Mary along with his children, and this led to the proclamation of the dogma of the Assumption, and this has been investigated by the Catholic Church as early as 1947, and also St. John Paul II has visited the site or shown some signs of recognition of this event. It has never received the formal statement of constate supernaturalitate, which, according to the 1978 document, the norms of the Congregation for Proceeding and Judging Alleged Private Revelations and Apparitions, that's a mouthful, that needs to be the statement from the local bishop saying that it is established as supernatural to say that it's worthy of belief by the Christian faithful. So that has not happened yet. But it is possible that someday, maybe even someday soon, as they do celebrate Mass there to celebrate the feast day of the Assumption on that very site. So there have been signs of church recognition. We did an episode of this on Explore with the Miracle Hunter. Check that one out if you go to EWTNOnDemand.com. Let's take a look at the 365 Days with Mary project. We do this every week where we look at the Marian devotion of the day. For today's date, August 19th, is Our Lady of Victory from San Marco la Catola in Italy in the 13th century. And the story goes that the mosaic icon of the Blessed Virgin Nacopeja in the Basilica of St. Mark in Venice dates around the reign of Emperor John, and the sacred image was carried into battle to bring good fortune. The Madonna Nacopeja, as she is popularly known, is the protectress of the city, and in a large replica of the original is enshrined in St. Peter's Chapel at St. Mark's, and the Festival of St. Liberatus, the martyr, in Our Lady of Victory is celebrated on August 19th. For the feast, the statue of Our Lady of Victory is processed through the streets of San Marco la Catola, and the town is adorned with lights and fireworks displays that can be seen in the evening. And that is Our Lady of Victory from San Marco la Catola in Italy in the 13th century. For more information on this fascinating devotion or any of the hundreds of other Marian devotions from around the world, you can go to 365dayswithmary.com. You can pick up the book or download the free app, 365 Days with Mary. Let's take a look at the Might Be Saint of the Day. We always talk about They Might Be Saints, which connects to my television show, They Might Be Saints, on EWTN, airs weekly, and also my book, They Might Be Saints, which you can get from EWTNRC.com. For today's date, the Might Be Saint of the Day is Blessed Jordan of Pisa, and his feast day, his memorial, is today, August 19th. And he was born around the year 1255 in Pisa, in Italy, and he joined the Dominicans at Pisa in 1280. He was educated at the University of Paris, and he was a lector at Santa Maria Novella in church in Florence in 1305, and he preached in and around Florence, and he founded the Confraternity of the Holy Redeemer at Pisa. He was a professor of theology, and he was a visionary with two great devotions, Our Lady and St. Dominic de Guzman. He made a scientific study of the use of preaching as an apostolic tool, and he considered a daring innovator for the use of the vernacular Italian as a beautiful musical language of evangelization. His use of Italian and Tuscan helped lead a modernization of the Italian language. He knew the Breviary, the Missal, most of the Bible, and the second part of the Summa Theologica by heart. And he was quick to state that learning alone can never make a good preacher. You need to have a holiness in your life. And that was Blessed Jordan of Pisa from 1255. And with one more miracle, Blessed Jordan of Pisa will be declared a saint. And this week on They Might Be Saints, you can go to theymightbesaints.com. Bishop Alphonse Gallegos, he strolled the streets of Sacramento, saving souls by visiting families and mixing with lowriders in the Latino community. I profile the Bishop of the Barrios this week coming up on Thursday. They Might Be Saints, Bishop Alphonse Gallegos. We need to take a short break, but when we come back, we're going to be talking with Elizabeth Nguyen about Our Lady of Lavang from the Our Lady of Lavang Foundation in Orange, California. Stay with us for that.
Now, back to the Miracle Hunter on EWTN. Here's Michael O'Neill.
Welcome back. You're listening to the Miracle Hunter radio show on EWTN Radio. This is Michael O'Neill. I'm the Miracle Hunter. On this program, we talk about Marian devotions and apparitions all around the world. If you go to my MiracleHunter.com website, you'll see I have documented 2,500 claims of Marian apparitions all around the world. And when we talk about famous cases from Italy and Europe, where there are many, and there's a plenitude of devotions to Mary and Marian apparitions that have been recorded throughout Christian history. And then we go all around the world, and perhaps there are less, but they are extremely significant, including one from Vietnam. Our Lady of Lavang is one we have from the 1700s, and the story behind her apparitions and the impact that those apparitions had are absolutely amazing. And we see the impact even here in the United States, where Vietnamese Catholics in Southern California celebrate in a big way with the building of a new shrine there. And we're so excited today to talk to the CEO of the Our Lady of Lavang Foundation, OLV Foundation, and that is Elizabeth Nguyen. Welcome back to the program, Elizabeth.
Good morning, and thank you very much, Michael. Nice to hear from you.
It's great to chat with you about this, and this is a Marian apparition that, of course, for Vietnamese Catholics is famous. It's the primary Marian devotion, primary Marian apparition in history. But for many Americans, maybe not in Southern California, they may not know the exact story of how all this came to be. Tell us a little bit. Give us the backstory of Our Lady of Lavang.
Right. As you know, the tiny country of Vietnam, where my family was from, it's been a rough one for them. They went through periods of different countries trying to occupy them. They had imperialism, they had king and queens, they had a democracy, they had many wars. And during the late 1700s, the Catholics were under persecution by the kings. So it was believed that the kings and queens, the royal family, they're basically the royalty and also the basically the divine. So if you were worshiping anything else, you were pretty much in trouble. So if you were a Christian or Catholic in this case, you'll be persecuted, brought to trial, and usually beheaded. So the middle region of Vietnam, Hue, the imperial city, there were lots of underground Catholics. They were brought into light probably from the missionaries from Spain and France during that time, and they were not rewarded, obviously, for their faith. So as they run through the jungle and being persecuted and, you know, essentially captured and beheaded, many of them had to worship in secret. So she appeared amongst them in this very turbulent time. And she basically comforted them. And the sighting of her apparition occurred in 1798 in the jungle of the outskirts of Hue, which is Lavang. It's actually a city. And she appeared through the lights in the trees, and they, the story was told over and over many generations, but she appeared amongst a large group of persecuted Catholics, and she had comforted by saying, you know, come to me and cry to me, and I will answer your cries. And many of them were sick because they were busy hiding for some days, some months. And she said, take these leaves, make it into medicine, and basically it will make you better. And that story became living legend over a long time, and she became the symbol of God and of the Mother of God of Vietnam. So she's not only a symbol of the Catholic faith, but really just the Mother of Vietnam, you know, somebody that came in and helped them with their problem. And, of course, all more research was made, and the Vatican and everybody came through, and essentially Pope John Paul II and did announce that this was a real apparition that happened there. So to make a long story short, that's literally in history. She, in the Catholic faith, that's what happened. But in that country of Vietnam history, she's known in many school books, in many churches, and in many non-churches, many non-Catholics know the story.
Absolutely amazing. We're talking today about with Elizabeth Nguyen about the Our Lady of Lavang devotion, originating in Vietnam and spreading all around the world, including to the United States. Talk a little bit about you talked about the devotion as it sprang up and surrounded those apparitions that were reported in the 1700s. Talk about the building of the shrine, perhaps, and the spread of the devotion, even to the United States.
All right, so as you know, the Vietnamese-American, there was a time in the 80s, late 70s and 80s, they started escaping on boats and escaping many ways to the United States and other Western nations because of communism was the prominent way of life in Vietnam, and many did not like it. So during the time of escape, a lot of them were praying to her versus any other saints or any other person, and they believed that their mother, their spiritual mother, and Holy Mother was the one that kept them going. And many live today in sort of my grandparents' generation to retell the story that this is how their faith was kept strong through their journey, but also through their families. Many priests of Vietnamese origin have a strong devotion to Our Lady of Lavang, and they continue their studies. And, you know, there's a big vocation of priests from the Vietnamese community in Southern California, and many of them will attest to you that they really venerate her. So that's one component. But the United States and potentially France is probably one of the two countries that have the most Vietnamese immigrants. And so because it was not easy since the 70s and 80s to go and visit their home country or even go there, even now it's very far, what happened is they've taken the devotion, they start building little and tiny shrines, or they ask their pastor to build these shrines in the territories of their churches. So you see Our Lady of Lavang shrines almost in a lot of churches in many states, including Southern California, that has Vietnamese mass or that has Vietnamese people. So namely, in Southern California alone, there's probably 10, 20 little shrines around. But the shrine that I'm involved in is probably the largest one over the years in Southern California. We're located at the diocese of the Christ Cathedral, which is the parish on the diocese. And it is in Garden Grove. And Garden Grove, Westminster, Santa Ana is probably the largest West Coast population of Vietnamese Americans, both Vietnamese and Vietnamese Americans. And as I mentioned earlier, ever since she opened, we have visitors, millions of visitors over each year since we opened in 2021. And they're not necessarily all Vietnamese at this point, or Catholics for that matter. We've become a beacon of faith for many. I'm very, very proud of that. She stands tall, and you can Google us. Her pictures are on OLLB.org, which is Our Lady of Lavang Foundation.org, or simply Christ Cathedral, .org, Christ Cathedral, California.org. And you'll see some of the activities surrounding the shrine, including Marian Day, including its dedication. We had recently in July, we had more than 20,000 people over the course of 2 days at our Marian Days at the shrine. So we're very proud of it, proud of the fact that people know about it, people come and pray there and study more about the life of Mary. And, you know, my involvement is really on the architecture, the building, the construction of the project. But I'm also a parishioner. So it's great to see people from everywhere. Yesterday, actually, we had some visitors from Oregon and Holland came by the office and the shrine and commented how beautiful she is and that they had to come and see over probably listening to your show and many other shows that talk about the shrine. So, yeah, we've been very fortunate that the shrine draws a lot of locals, but also international people, so that they can come and be closer to God through her.
Wonderful. We're talking today with Elizabeth Nguyen about Our Lady of Lavang and the new shrine that's there in Southern California, in Orange, California, right next to Christ Cathedral. And what is the status of the building? Is it complete, or is it what phase is it in the process of building that shrine?
Thank you for asking. The first phase of the shrine is done. That was opened in 2021. We are currently just breaking ground on the second phase, and this phase is shorter. It should take about a year to finish. It's called the Marian Garden. It's right behind the first phase, and it will be it will depict the four mysteries, the four Marian mysteries, glorious sorrow, and et cetera, et cetera. And you can go through the garden experientially by yourself, with small groups, with your family, and you'll learn more about the life of Mary. The miracles, as you would, of her life and how she really intercedes for us. So the Marian Garden spans over, I would say, a big part of the two-acre area that we're on. And it's a lot of trees, a lot of private prayer areas, and very nice art. We are engaging a really good architect that knows how to do this well. And we're engaging, we actually went to bid with a few artists across the world, from Spain, from South America, from here. And we decided to go with a South American group that will then create artistic renderings of the life of Mary in the four Marian mysteries. So if you can imagine four circular prayer areas, and they're pretty big. You can fit a group of 10, 20, and in there it will be prayers and different depiction of that. Of that, for example, of the sorrowful, of the glorious. So we're excited about it. Again, online you can see the architecture rendering on our website. And we're looking for support. If you want to visit and talk to us, call us, talk to me, talk to one of my staff or my volunteers. And we plan to finish this next spring. So come visit us before then, or come visit at the opening, and it should be really interesting. So the intention is, if you look at the shrine aerially from up high, you can see the front part symbolically has the alpha shape where she's actually resided. And then the back will be omega. So if you read any part of the Bible, it starts with me and ends with me, right? So it's a beautiful garden space, plus the shrine in the northeast corner of Christ Cathedral. And we are in the city, so it's easy to reach. So we feel that we're doing something that is significant, not just for the Vietnamese community, but for all communities that would like to come to Christ. And the shrine is outdoors, so it is open. You don't have to attend Mass. I mean, we do have Masses there from time to time on a schedule, but you can just go there and visit and pray by yourself or with some people. And then when the garden is open, you can go through your own self-guided tour.
Wonderful. And for people who want to find out more, perhaps to visit or to learn about the devotion of Our Lady of Lavang, what's a website that they can go to learn about your shrine?
Yeah, they can go to OLLV.org, or our phone number locally is 714-282-4290. That's the foundation phone number. It's a big project. It's probably one of the biggest outdoor projects on the campus and locally around us for some years now. And aside your show, we've been very fortunate to be invited on several others, and we're in a lot of magazines, especially surrounding about its opening. We had the nuncio come for the opening from representing the Vatican. So we're very blessed. And I have to thank the vision of Bishop Kevin Vann, who approved for this to be done and recruited me personally and recruited a few others and say, let's build it. So, it is an American shrine in the sense that it's very easy to access. It's spacious. I mean, the plaza, the Lavang Plaza, will fit easily right in front of the shrine, maybe 8,000 to 10,000 people standing with chairs, maybe 6,000 to 7,000 people. That's how we have Mass. And so it's not inconvenient in terms of getting to the actual Lavang of Vietnam, where it's in a remote rural area. She looks like Lavang. She's wearing a Vietnamese type of dress, but her face is actually both Asian and American. So I think that's the reason why many can relate to her. They come to her, and I see we are next to the UCI Medical Center. See a lot of doctors about this time coming to pray before they go to work. We see a lot of, we're across from the courthouse. We see a lot of attorneys and judges come and pray, and others who are going through something in their life. So she does already have, and, you know, we would love for you to come out, Michael. We do have testimonies of people that she's already performed in her own right miracles here at this corner in the Christ Cathedral. We have many that witnessed and come and told us about it because we're part of the project.
Yeah, believe it or not, I'm actually going to be there in November filming with EWTN. It'll be right around the time of that first anniversary, around November 18th. So hopefully I'll be able to stop by the shrine and see it there. Well, we're so grateful to you, Elizabeth Nguyen, joining us today to talk to us about Our Lady of Lavang and the new shrine that's coming up, being built in Southern California there in Orange, California. Thank you so much, Elizabeth, for joining us on today's program.
Thank you so much, Mike. It was always a pleasure.
God bless. That was Elizabeth Nguyen from Our Lady of Lavang Foundation. You can check that out at OLLVFoundation.org for more information. And that's all the time we have for today's show. If you missed any of this episode or want to catch up on past episodes, you can go to EWTN.com/radio, check out the audio archives, or download the free EWTN app. I'd like to thank our guest today, Father Timothy Tarnacki, talking to us about Our Lady of Częstochowa with the feast day coming up on August 26th. And also Elizabeth Nguyen talking to us about Our Lady of Lavang and the shrine there being built in Southern California. Check out my EWTN television series, Explore with the Miracle Hunter, on Saturdays at 6 p.m. Eastern Time. Tonight, we're looking at the episode about Rome. There are two Marian apparitions in Rome that are the subject of today's investigation. One miracle leads to the building of St. Mary Major, and the other a dramatic conversion when an anti-Catholic Jew wears a miraculous medal. Check that one out. Explore with the Miracle Hunter every Saturday and tonight at 6 p.m. Eastern Time. And look for my latest book, Science and the Miraculous, How the Catholic Church Investigates the Supernatural. It's out from 10 books and available at EWTNRC.com. I'd like to thank you for joining me today on Miracle Hunter, where from claims of healings and visions to the world's most inexplicable events, whether you're a believer or a skeptic, the truth is always worth the hunt. Talk to you next week.